Stefan Tolberg for Biz News. PC Ferreira is a Karoo farmer and the owner of the Karoo Geriep Conservancy between Colesberg and Hanover, who embodies the Afrikaans expression, a boer maak 'n plan. In his case, the farmer who has reintroduced hippos into the Sequoia River is making several plans, and I'm happy that he's joining me in the Biz News studio. Hi, PC, and welcome.
Hello, Linda. Nice to meet you. Nice to be with you. And always a privilege to be able to share passion and dreams.
Okay. Can you start us off by telling us, you talked about passion and dreams. Where does it come from?
Yeah. I'm a born Karoo farmer. I think we're here for about four generations. And you go through high school and in my case, I realized I love nature. I love people. But then you also realize that you're a farmer. You will become a farmer. That's how it is. I've got three sisters, so I'm the only boy and I inherit the land. And then over the last couple of years, you could slowly move what you're busy with in a direction of where you like to be and your passion. That pretty much took me about 30 years to get to where we are now. It's not the end of the journey, but I enjoy it thoroughly where I am now and what I'm doing. So off to school, straight to the farm, and then I wanted to move away from my parents to have my own house, and that's where I started the guest house. I borrowed some money from my mom to renovate an old farmhouse, and the way I wanted to repay her was to start at the guest house, and that was a year after school. So I was very young. I couldn't speak a word of English. Came out of agricultural school. I've renovated the two rooms in the house, and I could sleep two people for the first night. And I was full for the first night and for the first 30 days. It was the December holiday season. So from there onwards, the tourism thing starts to grow on me to the point where we have now, we can sleep about 86 people. In the interim, I have become involved with conservation. The first big thing for me was to bring hippos back to the Northern Cape in 1778. We shot the last hippos in the Northern Cape about 200 years ago. And this was Governor van Plettenberg from Netherlands. He was the guy that shot as much as 26 hippos per day in mid-1700s. And the one thing leads to the next thing. So I got to know sandparks. I got to know the formal government structures of conservation. Got some good contacts there. There's good relationships going. So we managed to bring the hippos back. That opened up the knowledge of what happened on this river way back in those early days when the first farmers moved from the VOC to claim some land in the Karoo. This was 1730. First six guys claimed some land. Yeah, and all the harsh things that happened, like the rest of the country and the rest of the world. I read about one morning where we shot and killed 162 san. And those are things that change your views and your visions of life and the way you see life. And it had a huge impact on me. I'm a believer, I'm a Christian. Yeah, so as we move forward, later on I've proclaimed my land as nature reserve. One property I proclaimed as a Karoo Geriep Nature Reserve. A couple of years later, we proclaimed the Hanover Artfort Nature Reserve, which is on another property. And we've developed all the houses on the farm as guest houses and lodges to the point where it's now done. It was a 30-year project. The hippos are back. One of the other options or things I really wanted to do was to bring buffalo back. We've got a nice strong herd of about 37 now. And the next big one is rhinos, which we have our fence inspection only 2 days ago. So the fences are up. I'm quite sure I'll get my permits to bring them back. And maybe the first time ever, I'll be offering the public the opportunity to come and look after rhinos, to be my eyes on the ground. So you will be able to buy from me. I don't want to call it the anti-poaching experience. I rather like to call it a day in the life of a Karoo rhino. I want to reinvent that old wheel. At this stage, the whole poaching industry is playing on our emotions. We can't do anything with a rhino. We can't shoot it or eat it or cull it. So there's no use. There is no income. I believe we need to add, we need to put a value on a live rhino, which I like to think I can develop a tourism product. So I can sell to my agents a product which will allow them to get clients to come and spend a day with the rhino. And they will pay me R2,500 for that experience. 10% of that money I will give to my local community, my farm workers, who is normally targeted by the poachers to get the information of the whereabouts of these animals. So once I do this for the first time ever, I think there will be a value on a live rhino. The money will flow in from the formal tourism industry. We won't go out and beg for money. And some of the money will end up with our poor black communities, and they will, for the first time ever, make money out of a live rhino. So there's all these nice projects going. I'm very excited about that. Yeah.
Can I just about the rhinos? Because people with farms, with rhinos, says the big cost is protecting the rhinos and how difficult it is. Do you foresee the difficulty in that, the fact that you attract poachers then?
That's the one big problem I think we have is the poaching industry, which is a sick industry, and it's not because of the poachers, it's because of us. It's because of the rhino industry that manage the animals with emotions. We should manage it called like a farmer. You farm with 2,000 sheep or 20 cattle or 5 rhinos, they should be managed. And that's our purpose on this planet. We are created to look after the planet, not emotionally. If we have been emotionally connected, we can't manage wildlife. So there's ways to make use of rhinos, to breed them, to build the numbers, to trade, to sell, to make money. I mean, if China is stupid enough to blow $1 trillion a year on rhino horns, I would say take the money and buy more land and breed more rhinos. It might be a bit controversial, but I'm a farmer. I'm not emotionally connected to animals. We farm them, we make them more, we use them, and we make money out of them. And we protect them, we look after our core animals. There's nothing as valuable for me as a merino sheep, as a ewe, a female animal that produces, that's where we make money. So if you have rhinos, you will protect them with your life. So yeah, I think the Karoo is one of the lost safe havens, to answer your question. In Gauteng, up along the Kruger, I mean, you walk 5 meters and you're behind a bush or a rock. In the Karoo, you have to walk 8 kilometers before you find a bush or a rock. There's no places to hide. If I see a helicopter, it must be on my property. If you see a helicopter in Gauteng, it can be on over 20 properties. So we have large properties in the Northern Cape. I don't want to say it's a foolproof thing, for sure not. But I might have the ability to have people with my animals 24 hours a day, all day. And I might have the ability to make those guys pay for being with the rhinos. It's a nice experience. It's a nice purpose. So why not go to the Karoo and spend a day or two with rhinos and just look after them and the visibility there. So if you take up a challenge like that, you will have a little bit of a course. I'll spend 4 or 5 hours with you, and I will give you only 3 telephone numbers to call. And that's all you need to do. You spend all day with the animals. If you see anything, you call 3 numbers and you run. Those 3 numbers will activate the whole community, the whole security system, the national anti-poaching unit, the local anti-poaching unit. You're just the first initial eye on the ground to say, okay, something doesn't look good. You call 3 numbers and you run away. And if there's people 24 hours a day with the animals, I think, yeah, there might be easier rhinos to kill then.
So you're not asking people to come with guns and do it. You're asking just to be vigilant and eyes on the ground.
Tourism, absolutely. A friendly, nice, easy thing. But look, it is dangerous, and other guys might not come without guns and things like that. I'm still young in the industry, young in the trade, so I need to learn. What I did do in the interim, I've also built, this doesn't fit with conservation, I've built the world's longest shooting range. So I host and accommodate the extreme long-range shooting sport on and off a few times a year. We have international competitions where they try to break records in this discipline of long-range shooting. The guys shoot 3 kilometers. So you have these people moving around on the property. It's, for me, it won't be a nice place or easy place as a poacher to go and play around. You won't know who's where. You don't know who's doing what there. But I incorporate these things with each other. It's a sport with rifles. It's the front technology in the world at this stage coming to play on my property. Very well organized and managed, but also with the knowledge of the rhino breeding program that will soon start here. And I will make use of all sorts of ways to make it as safe as possible for everybody involved.
So PC, just take us back. When are you planning to start this rhino program?
I might get my permits in the next 30 days. So for the next month, I'll be out in America in the month of February, coming back in March. I think March, April, we might get going with that. I'm flying out to London to a trade show there. Mid-year, July, and that's where I'd like to launch and start to market this program aggressively and get the agents lined up and get the tourists in. If you are a big company, like Mutual or Discovery or whoever, and you like to treat some of your clients or customers or even some of your workers, I think it's a nice thing to do to buy a week for five of your workers and say, listen, go and do your part for conservation and go and spend some time in the Karoo. It's a nice concept to test. I would like to test it. And if it's working, it's something I can easily see that can be rolled out all over the show. If you think of the Kruger Park, GBS plot 4,000 rhino bulls territories in the Kruger Park, and you go into the Mozambique side and you identify all the villages, the first 200 kilometers in Mozambique, and you allocate all the villages to a tent. The tent will be erected in the rhino territory where there's a bull. So there will be a rhino bull. That bull will have a tent where you will have guests every night looking after that animal. And all the money, 10 million rand every morning, you transfer into the bank accounts of the people in the villages in Mozambique. You solve the problem. And we like fighting problems. We look the problem in the eye and say, listen, this is the issue. The guys need money. They're hungry. Let's give them funds. If they kill a rhino, you break down the tent and five villages go without money for the next 5 years or 2 years. It's just the way I see it at this stage. It might get changed or in the future, I don't know. My daughter started this year with a master's degree in rhino reproduction. She's based at Brits now with Dr. Morne de la Rey. We're very excited about that, trying to bring those lost, I think it's the northern white rhinos, back to life again. So that's going to be part of the big picture for me.
Oh, so it's all in the family, this interest in rhinos and the preservation of rhinos. Can we get to your other projects, your non-profit organizations and plans to incorporate farms along the Sequoia River in a huge nature reserve? What progress are you making?
I've started three non-profits over the last couple of years. And the reason for those non-profits is to try to make my vision come true. And I've got some other resources I'd like to use, like the Karoo Research Station with the BDI, the Biodiversity and Development Institute, with Professor Les Underhill. So it might be that wherever I need information or help, we might get students in to come and work in that specific field. I always say my biggest problem in life in South Africa now is I'm a male, white, rich farmer. I'm all the no words, all the words you can't use. You can't go to government. I can't talk to people because I've got a cross behind all my titles. So I need to go use other ways to do what I want to do. I need to move through non-profits, or I need to move with PhD students or research or things like that. So the Sequoia River Nature Reserve is the river I live on. It's a 300-kilometer river. It starts at New Bethesda and it runs into the Orange River at Van der Kloof Dam. It runs through 75 title deeds that might belong to about 50 landowners. The total land surface of those properties is about 450,000 hectares, close to 500,000 hectares. Now, we know that South Africa wants to proclaim or wants to have about 20 to 25% of its land surface under formal protection. That's with all the other countries, Commonwealth nations. And in the Northern Cape, we need about 6 million hectares to do so. I don't think government have the money to buy those properties, and if they can buy it, they can't manage it. So we do have a problem, and that's where I'd like to think we can build a bridge between the local farming community and government. There is some perks. So if I proclaim my land as a nature reserve, I might ask government to expel me from paying land taxes. That's a big plus for me. It might protect my property from fracking and other mining operations. It might be easier for me to go and market myself as a nature reserve or part of a bigger nature reserve to the world than just marketing a little guest house in the Northern Cape. So the idea is to persuade farmers as much as possible on this river and try to ask them to proclaim nature reserves. They won't lose anything. You keep on farming under a management plan. You can farm on a nature reserve full capacity with a management plan. So it means you're not gonna destroy your plants. You're gonna try to work with nature, and you don't have to cost you a fortune. So it's possible. All this is possible in the current situation. Those 50 farmers might generate about 100 million rand a year out of wool, and I don't think you have to lose any of that. I think we can just add to that with a little bit of wildlife and a little bit of tourism.
Do you have buy-in from the farmers? Some of them decided to join you.
Yeah, not easy, not easy. We've got about two or three, so I think at this stage we might have about 40 or 50,000 hectares that's in this program already. We are talking to maybe three more landowners that might contribute another 30,000 hectares. I think it's a slow process and it will take time for the guys to buy in. I think the guys that's involved at this stage need to be successful for the rest to see there's other ways to raise income on a Karoo property. Maybe COVID has made a difference as well. I've lost my interest in money and success. People just chase bigger cars and more money, and that don't bring happiness. So it might be that with COVID and tough times, people started to look more deeply into life, and they might seek something more to life than just running flat out forward, destroying everything around you in the course of making more money. It's a small sacrifice you have to do to look after nature, and the reward is just phenomenal. I think it's a long-term thing. At this stage, Northern Cape has buy into the program. It's on the Northern Cape Protected Areas Expansion Program with government. So they also work hard to support me to interact with farmers. At this stage, the goal with the non-profit I've started is to go out and go and find funding. I'd like to get quite a bit of funding behind me to pay people who can full-time interact with the farmers. We're always negotiating some incentives, trying to persuade people to listen, if you do this, we can offer that. Maybe they will start to frack sometime soon, and that will make all the guys immediately being interested in nature reserves.
You mentioned fracking. Do you think farmers would be interested in declaring their property as nature reserves to prevent fracking on their land?
If you're full of debt and you owe the banks all you have, and somebody come with a little black suitcase onto your property and they say, listen, I can take away all the money you owe, I can give you all the money you owe to all the banks immediately, I'm sure 50% of the farmers will say, yes, come and frack, just give me the money. That is a risk. On the other hand, there's a lot of warm-hearted guys out there that can see that it's not a permanent solution. It's worthwhile protecting some areas in the world. I use energy. I drive around. I use Eskom. So as long as you use energy, you are guilty. You can't say we can't raise energy or drill or frack or burn coal as long as you're guilty yourself. So I know we're running out of options. I know we must generate energy somehow for the planet. I would like to think that we must, as much as possible, harvest wind and sun. We're just busy installing a 50-kilowatt solar system for my property now. It's quite a joyful, nice feeling to think that I might switch off Eskom completely in the near future.
You mentioned about how the sand people used to be shot in the past, which is always shocking to hear. But you're also trying to preserve or create a hub for the lost sand people of the Karoo. Are there any sand left in the Karoo?
Sure. I think there's quite a lot of them left in the Karoo. I don't think everybody is educated. Well educated, I don't think they haven't recorded, they haven't write down. So a lot of them don't know. I'd like to stay in this country. And to be able to stay here, you must make a difference. It have to come from our side. It can't come from their side. They're not the guys with the money. They're not the guys with the education. So I would say the guy with the money, the guy with the education, and the guy with the resources, it will be his responsibility to initiate the changes. You can just say, listen, we need to educate, we need to save lives, which is the first thing I need. I think is important is to, what I love to see soon is what I call a house of safety. And I like to roll this out and do this over 16 towns. So I had my meetings with the police departments and the social development departments, and they will support. Typical at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you must now remember this, a lot of these people, they live under the breadline. They don't know who they are. They don't have a heritage, and they don't have an identity. Above a certain level in society, the social grant system works wonderful. But below a certain level of development, and if there's no self-esteem, if there's no heritage, if there's no identity, then I think you can fall prey. That's what's going on in the small Karoo towns. So it's a problem for the police, it's a problem for the social system, it's a problem for everybody, and it's also a problem for that specific person, which we like to refer to as a fallen star. And we might not have enough of those places where you can take somebody for one night and say, listen, I've got a place where you will stay alive, you won't get raped, we won't rob you, and tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, then we can process your case and we can start. So I'd like to get that off the ground as soon as possible, a house of safety. With that comes a skill training facility. So if you pick somebody up in the streets and you invest money in saving that life and trying to build that person, you need to give a skill as well. You need to give hope. You need to try to break the circle. So a skill training facility for me is crucial. I think that's where I will position myself in the next 10 years, trying to get funds, trying to raise funds for these projects. Those two projects will cost 2 million rand each per year to get only 10 to 15 kids in every 5 months or so. So we are talking, I'm talking to a lot of people and there's a lot of movement. It hasn't happened yet, but I'm quite sure it will happen. It's like the hippos, it's something good. It's not because of me, it's not because I wanted it. It's just something that needs to happen on this planet. They were here, we killed them out. So whoever has said, hey, listen, I want to bring them back to the Northern Cape, we'll get the deal to bring them back. And the same with a safe house and skill training. If the need is there and you put your hand up and say, okay, I'm available, what can I do? Then normally the thing starts to roll and things starts to happen. And all these things are linked together. Talking about the third nonprofit, which is operational, which we call the Karoo Oasis Route. That's a tourism initiative, 16 towns, and the idea is to bring tourism to these routes and to these towns to let money flow in. One of my biggest problems in tourism is the wage bill. You need people for tourism, and the wages kills you. But that's good for the community. And I think that's why tourism is such an attractive industry for government and for the community. You can't do that, and you can't have a successful tourism industry without putting a lot of wages back into the community, and you need skills as well. So we're very thankful for government. They do financially support this program already. It's the first year. It's a pilot program. We've got funding in the account. We're busy building websites. We're busy building itineraries of these 16 towns. So you will be able to go onto a website and you will have an itinerary connecting three small towns like Philippstown, Pietersville, and Van der Kloof, or Orania and Hopetown, and it will advise you what to do in those towns, where to eat, where to sleep. It will just lift all the activities and experiences. It's a slow process, and for me to go out to sit on a trade show in America or England and market Hanover and try to persuade an agent to bring people to Hanover, it's quite a big step if Hanover is not prepared for that person. At this stage, if you drive into a small Karoo town, five guys will come and beg at your door, and there will be plastic bags lying all over the show. That's all the problems that arise out of a dream. You say, okay, let's bring tourism back. Let's start a non-profit and let's do a Karoo Oasis route. But then you walk into the next problem. You need water, you need electricity, you need sewage. So then all of a sudden it becomes a municipal problem and you need to engage with the municipalities and with the municipal managers. That's where we should spend energy and time and effort, is to make people understand, how does it work? How does money work? What does tourism mean to a small community? And what does a tourist need to be able to come and spend their money there? What a process.
PC, you've got so many projects going, we could literally speak all day. And I'm almost too scared to ask, what else?
Well, I've got a lot of application out, and I'm not sure if I'm going to get the money. This is for beehives. And this is just how everything is fitting together. If you live in a small town like Hanover, and you become one of my members on the Karoo Oasis route, so that means you will have a guest house or a tourism activity. Well, I will bring four hives to your lodge and we will go in once a year and harvest that honey. We will bottle it and we will label it. And you will sell it in your lodge to the community at a premium price. I will take that money back from you and I will give it to the little shop in the street where most people stand and beg. So if anybody in the community see anybody begging, you send that person into the store and say, listen, there's already 10,000 rands worth of bread and milk waiting for you. And if you walk into the little store, the store owner, who is now a partner, will give you a garbage bag, and you will first have to go and clean the street, fill up the garbage bag. Once you hand in the garbage bag, you will get a bread and a milk. This is the ways that I would love to use nature. These are sensitive insects, sensitive species. There's a huge conservation value to that globally. So this is the way we can use something like these to generate money and income to get street kids off the streets, get food to them, and also clean out the small towns, let them collect the garbage. And look, there's so much negativity, and you can give me a list of 20 things why it shouldn't work or why it can't work. But that shouldn't make you not trying it. So I would love to try these things and say, well, there might be a possibility that it can work.
Shoo, PC Ferreira, you are a mine of ideas, and best of luck to make them a reality. And we will definitely watch the process. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thank you so much. I thank you for your time. And yeah, I hope you come and visit us sometime.